Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Jeffrey Compton, publisher of CDC Gaming Reports. We'll be talking to Jeffrey shortly. This show is being pre-recorded in late April for airing 5 weeks later. The reason we're doing this is I'm going to be on a four-week honeymoon starting May 24th.
Nice for you.
Yes. Sorry we didn't invite you, Richard. So on the May 29th, when the show is going to air, Bonnie and I will be in Paris. And so anyway, it's possible. We're going to talk about gambling events. So it is possible that certain current events have happened in the 5 weeks between when we taped the show and when it airs, which could make our comments seem naive or possibly even stupid. So be it. Overall, we hope you'll find our discussion enlightening and entertaining. I met Jeffrey Compton almost 20 years ago when we were both beginning careers as gaming writers. The book he was writing, The Las Vegas Advisor Guide to Slot Clubs, was an eye-opener to me. At the time, I was concentrating on learning the games perfectly and didn't appreciate the nuances of slot clubs. I was writing about games in much more detail level than Jeffrey was considering, so for whatever reason, we liked each other, no accounting for taste, I suppose, and sometime later formed Compton Dancer Consulting. That organization lasted 7 years or so, and then we split it apart in a friendly manner and went our separate ways. Jeff is currently the publisher of CDC Gaming Reports, which publishes a series of reports online for casino management. Although the information published is useful to players, usually players expect to get their news for free, so there are very few player subscribers. Tonight, we're going to be talking about several items in the news. Jeffrey Compton, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
It's, okay, good. So, first topic. Is gaming's older audiences a concern? Should the casinos be doing more to get a younger crowd in the door? And which casinos are successfully programming to younger audiences?
First question, it's a concern. How the topic came up with me on the website, you mentioned getting news for free. You can always visit our website at cdcgamingcontrols.com.
cdcgamingreports.com.
CDC, thank you. cdcgamingreports.com. And we have the latest AP stories and the latest Las Vegas Review Journal stories and the latest Bloomberg stories, which you can check out for free.
Uh-huh.
Also, our commentaries from various writers you can check out for free. I had seen an article in the paper about on the web, excuse me, where somebody in New Hampshire was complaining about his mother who had moved to Arizona and had for the last 10 years been spending all her time in the casinos and had lost probably $40,000, and how the casinos preyed on her. The way they preyed on her was they learned her name and learned her pets' names and smiled at her when she walked in the door.
And put nickel slot machines out on the floor.
I mean, it's just awful how they abused this poor woman.
Uh-huh. They do the same thing at IHOP.
Yes. And at the time I was scanning this article, my aunt was visiting. I have an 88-year-old aunt who's sharp as a tack. And she was the one who mentioned that seniors are not 18-year-olds. I mean, they're not helpless. They're not stupid. So they're not helpless. They're not stupid. So why don't we, she objected to the article. And so I wrote a column on that. And then I put at the bottom that the growing audience is casinos or people 40, 50 and over. And that should be a concern, not that they're preying on elderly, but the audience is getting older in the casino these days.
But this was always true. For the most people, by the time they have enough money to spend in casinos, they are, the kids are off to college, the kids moved out and stuff like that.
That's a dangerous assumption.
Okay.
That's a very dangerous assumption because there's a difference between an older audience and an aging audience. An older audience is a reality, okay, as you say. People in the casinos are 50 years old or 40. Average age is maybe 55.
Do we have any data for what the average age of the players?
Unfortunately, we do not.
30 years ago?
Unfortunately, we do not, and unfortunately, nobody ever kept it. Okay.
Because my impression was that the average age was lower 30 years ago.
It might have been.
I think that's because you were 3 decades younger 30 years ago, Richard.
Thank you for saying that. but they aren't keeping data on it, either locally or nationally. And considering all the data the average casino keeps on their players, you think they could come up with the average age. So I put at the bottom of the thing, bottom of the article on preying on elderly, that they don't prey on elderly, that I think the problem is an aging audience. I immediately got 10 responses from casinos, all of which said, oh, well, that's not a problem because when people turn 50, they automatically wake up in the morning and run to the slot machine.
And 10 different casinos said that?
Well, not exactly, but I mean, that was the gist of it all. Uh-huh. And that I really have nothing to worry about. And so what I did was, so I then proceeded to write an article on, there is evidence that this could be a problem. When you and I hit 30, there was a major change, or 40, there was a major change then in slot machines. They got away from the traditional reels. They went to videos. They went to nickel multi-lines and penny multi-lines. They went to games that are, based on television shows or movies or some such. And back then, I always thought, and you will probably disagree with me, that the move then wasn't to get people to slot machines, but was to get people to not go to video poker. Because video poker was traditional lower hold. So if we could keep a larger crowd toward slot machines, we could make money. So the industry has adjusted, and I think they have to adjust again because the people who are 20 and 30, they'll go downtown to downtown Las Vegas and they'll party, but they won't play. It's almost like an anathema to them.
Even on the Strip, you'll see a lot of the young people are going there for the clubs.
Yes.
And not. Now, it seems the one attempt that they've been making is to put these dancers in the pits, the party pits.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's. I don't think the idea
of what should happen has happened. I mean, I think they'll find it, but I think there'll be a lot of trial and error. Some of it is booking the entertainment, but I think the gaming, and of course, table games have always appealed to younger people for many years. But I still think that they haven't hit the golden nugget. I'm just using that as a term. They haven't hit the golden nugget to figure out how to bring in younger players. But my thing is, I think it should be a concern. We have the racing industry, which is now dying. And I talked with a jockey friend of mine, or ex-jockey, and he said he was in the business for 30 years, and he still remembers people he saw every decade. Unfortunately, he never saw their children or grandchildren. And so there is a problem. One correlation I made is in the arts community. I'm involved in the arts community. Theater in this country has an older audience, but the audience is actually getting younger, and especially a professional and regional and Broadway theater. But orchestras' audiences are every year they're aging one more year and one more year and one more year, and soon they're going to just age off the map. And a lot of that is because theater has done a lot better job in keeping a modern product, where if you go to a classical music concert, most of the stuff was written 100 years ago or more.
Now, one of our sponsors is the Palms Casino, and I definitely play there a lot. But the music over the speakers overhead is to people younger than me. So their music is geared towards a younger crowd, and it's different at 10 o'clock at night than it is at 10 o'clock in the morning. They seem to have two different clienteles they do with. But are other casinos, this would seem to be appropriate if you're trying to get a younger audience?
George Maloof, when he had the Palms, ran the Palms, had more of a sixth sense of what younger people like.
Well, he dated them.
Okay. Your show, not mine. And whatever it is, unfortunately, most experts I know who are good at identifying younger trends, even though they're over 50, will get remarks like that made about them. And but it's like I say, I think it's something the industry will have to evolve into. The first thing they have to realize, though, is I think it's a problem. I don't think that the people who are 25 and 30 today, or 25, 30, and 35 today, 20 years from now or 10 years from now, will evolve into players based on the current product that's sitting on the casino floor.
All right, so I think we've...
I just have one more question. The Electric Daisy is coming up, which certainly attracts tons of young people to Las Vegas, and I guess maybe an attempt to deal with this. Is there any data about the young people who come for Electric Daisy? Is there complaints that they don't gamble, or does gambling
I've heard comments that certain events to try to get younger people or different groups of people to Las Vegas or to areas of Las Vegas has not resulted in increased gaming numbers. It has resulted in increased bar numbers and increased restaurant numbers and increased hotel numbers.
Which for the city as a whole and these organizations as a whole is not terrible.
It's not terrible. But we also have to realize that this is not a Las Vegas problem as much as it is a regional gaming problem. And the regional gaming doesn't have the glitz factor to bring in that crowd. So it could be a much bigger problem for them.
All right. Yeah. Let's move on to another subject. Sheldon Adelson has one of the richest men in the world. Doesn't think online gaming is a good idea. He's willing to spend zillions to stop this. How do you think this will, what the final chapter is going to be? Or do you think there ever is going to be a final chapter?
Oh, I think 10 years from now, we will have legalized some form of expanded internet gaming. Right now, first, I disagree that the current, the AGA was the American Gaming Association, which is the principal lobbying industry organization in Washington, D.C., was gung-ho on it. And then was told by Murren, their Jim Murren, who is also head of MGM, who is also head of their board, to pull back on it. They set up a separate lobbying group to fight the lobbying group that Sheldon has created, and they're playing around, and they've discovered that half the people on one group applied for a job with the other group, and half the people on the other group applied for a job. So there's a lot of real sincere thought in all this. I think that the AGA's, and I have never had a discussion with anybody there on that. This is strictly my guess. It's also the guess of Ken Adams, my co-editor at the CDC Gaming Reports.
Ken has been on this show two or three times.
Okay. That the pullback was caused by complaints and concerns of smaller casinos. One of the more public ones was John Ferrari, the owner of the Atlantis in Reno, who, and there was also a lot of complaints from casinos in Colorado, of which Ken owns one. And so I think that that was the major impetus for the AGA to sort of step back, unless there was something sinister going on, but I can't see one person threatening to pull their membership, no matter how large, would change an entire organization.
So wait, are you saying that the AGA is not fighting as hard as
they used to be? It's been in the papers, Richard. It's on our website. They are not. They've taken a more neutral stance on gaming and are devoted on iGaming and are devoting their efforts to other topics we'll talk about. And so they're not that into, they've been told because of, according to Murren, he was concerned that it would split the organization. I don't think that it was Sheldon as much as other members of the business. The AGA very badly wants to get regional and smaller casinos to be members of the AGA. And I think they were going to find out that this internet stance was going to hurt them. So where do I think it's going to go? First, I don't think there'll be a national ban on it. I don't think they have the votes. I don't think there'll be a big national approval. That's because they don't have the votes. And we're not talking about the most cooperative Congress. So I think what it will end up with, and I could be totally wrong, and by the time you hear this broadcast, I might be proved totally wrong, but I think you'll have a few more states bringing it on, and then I think you'll go into a standstill position while they wait 3 or 4 years to see how it really works.
Hmm. All right. Let's take up another subject. Massachusetts. They have some... they're trying to get some gaming in there, and there's some differences of opinion. It's pretty interesting. So what's happening there, and where do you see that going?
Oh, God.
You can call me Bob. It's okay.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Dancer, sir.
No, actually, I think we discussed this the last time you were on the show, Jeffrey.
Yes, but things have changed.
This is your neighborhood, right?
Things have changed. I'm fortunate that I have somebody I went to school with who runs an insurance industry, a woman named Sarah McCormick Reagan, who is one of the most down-to-earth people you've ever talked to. And she doesn't try to impress anyone. And, for example, I knew her for 30 years before I found out she's second cousins to the Kennedys. And she just didn't trade on that. There are some people who would have told you that 3 minutes into meeting them. But she really has followed intensely to the finites on Massachusetts gaming. And she has come out and said she does not think a casino will be in Massachusetts until 2020.
Really?
Yes. Maybe a slot parlor. But the one slot parlor, the Penn National, is operating. But every day there's another roadblock. Every day there's another concern. Plus, the Supreme Court might will they rule that there was a petition drive to totally repeal gambling in Massachusetts? They got enough signatures, but the attorney general said that Martha Coakley said we can't repeal gaming. We'll owe the gaming companies millions, if not billions, of dollars, and it'll set the clock back. So they went to, so she ruled it off the ballot. It's May 5th is when the Massachusetts Supreme Court will hold hearings on if it goes on the ballot. So MGM has immediately said, well, we're not, you know, paying you any money, or we're paying you a lot of reduced money until you settle if you want gaming in this state or not. My guess is the Supreme Court will probably rule that it can go on the ballot, but it cannot stop anything that's been approved or progressed so far or up to Election Day. So you're going to have gaming in Massachusetts. Also, based on current polls I've read, I think particularly if there was the right publicity campaign on how much this would cost the state and how it might not even be legal, that the majority of voters in Massachusetts would vote against repeal. Okay, so that's that issue. We have a problem with the Suffolk Downs. Oh, who's the partner in Suffolk Downs? The Suffolk Downs Casino. The problem is that in order to remember that Revere passed it and East Boston didn't. So Suffolk Downs says, okay, we'll build the casino in Revere. So that led to a problem that in order to build the casinos, I guess they have some old historic horse barns that are declared a national monument, and you can't turn those, you can't tear those down. So that thwarts that plan. Then there's the problem with Wynn up in Everett, and the problem he's having is that one of the people he's getting the land from won't sign a paper as to how he's financed and where all the money came from and this, that, and the other. And so this could hold up the progress in Revere.
But the state seems to be willing to help him on that by using eminent domain or something like that.
That was not suggested by the state. That was suggested by the mayor of Everett.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And, of course, that would be a huge legal battle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Also, the rest of the landowners who agreed that instead of getting sizable rent, they get 2 cents on the dollar. They might not go for that.
Go figure.
Yes.
All right. So this is a mess. It sounds like it's going to continue. And according to your source, it's going to continue for another half decade at least.
Oh, I'm not done yet.
Oh, all right.
Okay. The new mayor of Boston wants now that the Boston populace gets to vote on if there's a casino in Revere or Everett. Okay.
And he's betting that the Boston populace would vote against this.
Yes. Okay. The Boston populace, please remember the town was founded by Puritans. You know, the same group the same group Oliver Cromwell used to run. And they're not a real pro gaming crowd. They're not people who go to casinos. They're people who are worried about how it will affect their arts organizations or the local ballet or the local theater or the local charities of all sorts.
Well, and how the Patriots are doing in the Red Sox.
Yeah. There's an Indian tribe on Martha's Vineyard. They're trying to get a casino approved. And you think the people in Boston don't like casinos. The people in Martha's Vineyard, forget it. There is talk of putting one in Fall River, which is a sort of beaten up old town on the south end of Massachusetts. The problem that creates is that the Rhode Island casinos are objecting to that. So it could be a real mess.
All right. So let's get away from this mess and start talking about another mess. Now, a month or two ago, there was discussion that in the near future, casinos are going to need to find out where their high rollers get their money. And the thought is that if these high rollers have to identify where they got the money, that they'll say, don't want to gamble in the United States, let's go to Macau or somewhere else and gamble there. Now, do you see these new regulations actually passing, or is this just a thought, just a minor discussion that's going to go away?
I think it's a minor discussion. I'll go into some more background in a minute.
Okay.
I think it's a minor discussion or a major discussion that will lead to enforcing rules that are currently on the books stronger, which wasn't happening. And maybe some adjustments against some particularly high rollers, okay? For example, before I came here today, I had breakfast with a controller of one of the casinos.
Okay.
And he told me something I didn't realize. If you went into a casino and put $700 into a video poker machine.
Yes.
Played two hands and cashed out.
Yes.
Okay. There are forms that they're supposed to fill out for the IRS, or there are regulated forms that they are to make sure that you're not doing this every day is sort of cheap way to launder money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is that
because you only played two hands?
Two hands, right. You obviously the money that came out of the machine wasn't the results of your gaming, you know.
I see.
Yeah. So there are considerable regulations on the books that I am not aware of. I don't know if you're aware of. That the casinos have to do, and of course there's considerable regulations in the banks today. I think that the concern is that the casinos, there's been a talk of an incident at Caesar's Palace, there was talk of an incident at the Sands, Las Vegas Sands, a Venetian or whatever.
Palazzo.
Of something strange going on. And so I think that the first thing that the organization is, I can't remember its long title, it's called FinCorp. That's the government regulatory body. And I think what they want is to get they don't want to close down the gaming industry. Ken Adams wrote a column where he listed two circumstances where regulations were passed without much consideration to the gaming industry. One of them was the elimination of silver dollars. Well, of course, the last thing they thought of when they eliminated silver dollars is the gaming industry. And the second thing was the regulations involving W2Gs when that was introduced. There wasn't, I guess, in their opinion, enough consultation with the gaming industry. So now you have an officially organized gaming industry who is making considerable noise, and the entire discussion has come from them. Come from them and came from an article done by Reuters, where Reuters said that there was rumors that FinCorp was going to pass a lot of new regulations, though they didn't say what, on where money comes from, and you know where funds come from. Of course, the Venetians and the Wynns of the world may be concerned, or the MGMs or the Caesars, on how this affects the big, huge players, many of which are at Macau anyway. So, I think there is, but what they don't want is another roadblock for the guy who comes in with $25,000 twice a year to play, you know, which he primarily loses. And I think that is their main concern.
Okay, yeah, there would be several listeners to this show who would sometimes come in with that size money and larger.
Yeah. By the way, I just want to say it's not FinCorp, it's FinCEN,
which is
the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.
Okay, I always get it wrong. Well,
Richard's on Google as we do the show. Thank you very much, Google.
I'm
a little bit familiar with this because, as you say, Bob, many of our listeners have problems with this issue.
I think many of your listeners should find a way of communicating their concerns. I mean, they can send a letter to me. They can send a note to Bob. They can, you know, whatever. But I think they have to be aware. And names aren't going to be used. But one part of a lobbying organization, part of an industry organization, has to be to present instances to financial regulators, to government regulators, to congressmen, to senators, or whomever, that they are unaware, that these people are unaware of, that they're affecting someone. Usually, we always find out when we pass a new regulation, as, for example, Obamacare, and I'm not dumping on Obamacare, but there was a bunch of people who lost their insurance, and this was totally unexpected. So it wasn't I don't think it was the dramatic case the Republicans portrayed it was, but it was an unexpected consequence. So I think people who are worried about an unexpected consequence, especially if they're, you know, I am assuming your people who are, you are concerned about aren't laundering money from terrorist organizations.
No. The biggest problems for players is, and I think this is really going to be the if anything kills advantage play gambling, it's going to be this, the inability to play as an anonymous person anymore. So that's the problem, is they want to be able to not tell the casino who they are. And as I say, it's a big problem for players. It's not that they're laundering money. It's not that they're trying to break any laws. They're just simply trying to not tell the casino who they are.
Richard, you're always welcome to write a column on my website, which is read by all the groups you want to, discussing this problem.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I think it's a problem that all the people involved should be involved with. Because you're talking about innocent. You're not talking about somebody who's terrorist. They just want to, they want to keep, for one reason or another, they want to keep fairly anonymous. And they like the fact that they're fairly anonymous. And there's a lot of good reasons that somebody doesn't want a gambling known. And it's not because they're short on child support payments or they're not paying their bills. They just don't want to, maybe they don't like a lot of phone calls from friends they didn't, and relatives they didn't know they had, which is the big reason why state lotteries are trying to pass laws that you do not have to, states are passing laws that if you win Powerball or the other one, Mega Millions, you can stay anonymous. You don't have to declare it. You know, you have to declare it on your income tax, but
you
don't have to give up your name to the press. The biggest problem, if you ever talk to big jackpot winners, and years and years and years ago, I did an article on people who had won megabucks.
Okay.
Yes. And the biggest problem is not strangers. You can unlist your number and hire a lawyer. The problem is friends and relatives. I don't know if you knew this, but little Susie, my niece, always wanted to go to Juilliard.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So this sort of nonsense. So I think there is a respect for these people are all paying their taxes. These people are all declaring, you know, I know what Bob used to go through, you know, to make sure, keep it all honest with the IRS. So it's not, they have reasons not to tell the world. I think somebody has to express their opinion, express not their opinion, express their status and why this is the problem.
Sure. I because mean, I'll be honest, William Bennett ought this, to be up on the front you, lines until you for this, brought right? this.
I mean, until you brought this up, I was not even aware that this affected this group.
Oh, yeah.
Largely, the people who read your CDC reports, so would not be sympathetic to this group.
But I don't know. Think about William Bennett, right? I mean, this is a Christian Bible thumper, you know, morality first guy who had that big scandal when they found out he was an enormous video poker player and had lost millions of dollars.
Also, I disagree with that. What I disagree with is that I don't think it's advantage players that are that much concerned as much as large players.
Well, that could be.
And I think if it was portrayed as large players don't want it, like to keep as much anonymity as possible. Let's face it, an advantage video poker player who's hitting regular jackpots is not anonymous to the casino. I mean, they have to come over and take his social security card and issue his W-9 and all that.
Well, that's true, but W-2. when Richard was talking about playing anonymously, he was referring to table games where somebody, a lot of our listeners would rather sit down at a blackjack table, not identify themselves, partly to make it harder for the casinos to coordinate enough information to kick them out. And
here's the thing. When players' cards first came out, first of all, when I started playing, the pit bosses never referred to anybody by their name. They would call them Mr. B or Mr. F or whatever.
Yeah.
And when players' cards first came out, and they said, "You want a player's card?" And you would say, "No, I don't want it." And they would go, "No problem. We'll call you Mr. Smith or whatever." But they would still comp you. They could look at your play and go, "This guy deserves a free room or a free meal," and they could still comp you. But even I think there are many of us who are willing to forego the comps if we just don't have to give up our name, even though we shouldn't have to, you know. You know, they should be able to just give me a player's card that says John Doe if that's what I choose.
I disagree casino management community would be totally unsympathetic for this.
So Richard would be happy to write this article within this week. Is that right, Richard?
Oh, yeah. That's what I need, more homework right now.
Yeah. Well, do you want to get your point made? Because, okay, how many blackjack players do you know, Richard, who think they're advantage players and aren't really?
Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely.
They're the type that Bob used to say that they should send a limousine. Okay, but they would be the ones who would be concerned about a law like this.
Well, okay. And also, I mean, here's one of those areas where casinos shoot themselves in the foot. You have this player who thinks he knows how to play blackjack, and while he's sitting at the blackjack table, his wife is sitting at a slot machine.
Right.
And then when he's done at the blackjack table, he goes over to the crap table. And they bar these guys. It happens all the time that they bar these guys that are actually players that are winning players, I mean, for the casino side.
Years, my favorite casino story, Bob's heard it. Years and years ago, Bob and I did a show in Texas, I think. Austin, Texas.
Maybe.
And, right. And on our way back, we didn't come back on the same plane. On the way back, I'm sitting next to a couple from Houston who are going to Las Vegas, and they asked me, the conversation started, they asked me where they were going to go downtown to see the Fremont Street Experience, and they wanted to know where to eat.
Okay.
And I said, "Well, where are you staying?" and they said, oh, we're staying at the Stardust. Shows you how long ago this was. And I said, do you have a host? I mean, oh, yeah, they give us a free room and free meals and free. They pick us up with a limo at the thing and all this. And I says, well, Boyd, which owns the Stardust, owns three casinos downtown. I'm sure if yes. you talk to your host, they'd much rather set you up than you going across the street to the Golden Nugget and decide you like the place. So then I asked the gentleman, what do you play? And he goes, oh, $5 and $25 blackjack. And I go, you play $5 and $25 blackjack? And I'm sitting to myself, room, food, limo.
That doesn't sound like you can get much comps.
Yes. Then I go, what does your wife do while you play? Oh, she likes to play the $1 and $5 slots. Bingo!
Yeah. Yeah. So. I have to tell you, I was talking to a guy last night who is a craps dealer at a casino in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a player who comes in all the time and will walk up to the crap table and throw $500 on the layout and yell all the hard ways on the hop and any seven. You know, bets like this,
yeah.
Right? Anyway, the guy hit four or five bets in a row, was up over $10,000 almost immediately, and the bosses cut him off and told him he couldn't play anymore. And the dealer said, you know, why are you cutting him off? And the boss told him, because he's too hot right now.
Oh, God.
Now, the fact that that still goes on.
Yeah, with all the education in the field. With all the education in the field. That's just, you know.
Insane. Yes, that's insane. What that is.
Back to the subject. That player you just described might have a concern about complicated reporting laws.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he certainly won the casino when most casinos would welcome.
All right. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's move on to another subject. Do you think gaming is overextended? And if so, why?
It depends on where it's overextended. Gaming spread the last 20 years because of several movements. Indian tribes got into it.
Uh-huh.
States saw it as a way to get more money in and not increase taxes. Or the neighboring state, let's take Ohio. Ohio for many years voted against expanded casino gaming, year after year after year. Then Pennsylvania approved it. Michigan approved it. Indiana approved it. So
Illinois.
Illinois did. But Indiana, for example, a bunch of casinos in Indiana are positioned around Cincinnati as if their army is holding siege. And so there were buses. When my wife was healthier, she used to make a career out of going on these bus trips and writing about them. Uh-huh. And there were tons of bus trips out of Ohio. So Ohio finally passed it based on the argument that why should the money leave Ohio? So Detroit casinos have taken a plunge. Indiana casinos have taken a plunge. Pennsylvania casinos have taken a plunge. And Ohio has seen a little growth in their casinos. Iowa last week. Told one casino they couldn't renew and told another casino they couldn't build because they're concerned about how it's affecting the casinos. Up in Wisconsin, the governor still can't make up his mind on if there's going to be another Indian casino based on concerns of the existing casinos. Yet in Illinois, they want to put one in downtown Chicago.
Uh-huh.
So,
but if they do put one in downtown Chicago, it's probably going to kill, you know, Joliet and Elgin and
in
the Northwest Indiana casinos,
right?
Yeah.
So right now, you know, the number of people who live within 25 miles to 50 miles of a casino these days. We see Atlantic City, which is struggling beyond belief. We see lower numbers in Connecticut. And so I think based on all that evidence, yes, there is, except in certain markets, there is still the big enchilada out there. That
well, there are casinos in Las Vegas that are struggling too.
Yes. No, but what I mean is there's one region of the country the government, the gaming industry just would love to legalize gaming. Texas. Okay. And North Florida. So
there's a lot of gambling in Florida.
There is, but a lot of it's in the southern part of the state.
The more populous parts.
Yeah, and the Seminoles competing, partnering with Disney have managed to keep an expansion out of the picture. So I think that
I've always thought it crazy that Texas, of all places, still doesn't have gambling.
One reason is because when they passed the anti-gaming laws in Texas, they made them almost impossible to change. Now, a correlation is when they passed the anti single sex marriage acts, they also made those impossible to change, except the courts are turning them around. You won't see the courts making gambling legal in Texas. So I don't know. I mean, it takes almost 3/4 or an inch. Somebody explained to me one time what it would take to legalize gaming in Texas. And the current governor, Rick Perry, when he remembers, is not for gaming. So
I think he's just been insulted. All right. Good. Now, we have about 7 minutes left. What news and developments should players be interested in terms of gambling news?
Well, it depends on the player.
Okay.
Okay. One development I'm following is IGT has introduced interstate megabucks, sort of, I forget what they call it, and but where you'll get super high jackpots by combining games across state lines. This could be a very, very serious development to the lottery, because the thing that's kept the lottery going has been Powerball and Mega Millions. I know many people who have never played a daily game or a scratch-off game, but when the thing gets to $530 billion, they're in. So I think that is an interesting development. The subjects we've been talking about are interesting developments, but I think anybody who considers themselves an advantage player should be following the news as much as possible. And I'm not trying to sell them a subscription. As I mentioned, there's a dozen ways to get it free on our site. And so, but I think it's something you should be concerned about and how it affects you, and especially the casual gamer, not the advantage player, but the casual gamer should have no qualms in writing to a congressman about this law is going to, or this is going to screw me up. And
what about, Jeffrey, could you talk about the decline in comps? Even Gene Scott wrote recently
about how
much less they're getting in comps. Where do you see that going? Are the casinos shooting themselves in the foot?
They may be, they may not be. Of course, the big development in comps is players' play is much more traceable. And players' records are much more traceable. And so years and years and years ago, you would have casinos that were basing comps on people who were loud or people who were aggressive or people they were just familiar with because these people played all the time. And now, almost all of them insist that a player's club card be used, and they can do much more math on how they're figuring how to give a comp. So I think that's part of it. I think some casinos are doing overkill. Gene said, you know, what used to be the big basket, big fruit basket, became the medium-sized fruit basket, became the bag of peanuts. And I do think there's overkill, and I do think you'll see some changes in it. I'm doing a survey right now for a casino, and it's trying to figure out why they've lost a couple of major players. And is it the comp system? Is it the fact they just aren't playing as much anymore? What is the problem? So it'll be interesting to see how that's affecting it. Now, a lot of casinos in its place have put out, besides you earn points, you earn comp dollars, and you have a set to comp dollar account, which for many players was a surprise, because you do have a lot of players out there who, you know, were raised not to ask for stuff like that. So, you know, it can be a street both ways. Please remember, Gene was a specialist at getting the most for what she was doing.
No, I know, but she's just one of many. Even the casinos that were giving you a percentage of theoretical, the amount of the percentage that they're giving back has been lowered over the years.
True.
And part of that may be the recession. I don't know, but
part of it was the recession. A lot of it was the recession, and part of it was a concern of how accurate the theoretical number was, who's getting it, that sort of thing. I think, like I say, I think this is comps, like games, like everything else, is an evolving thing, Richard. Casinos will have to see. Some of them will overdo it. Some of them won't. They'll have to sort of figure it out on their own. I do think that they have to worry about, I think the places that are still using these very, very large clubs, one size fits all sort of thing, are going to run into the most trouble.
All right. Jeffrey, thank you very much. This was interesting. We normally don't hear from the prospect of the casino surviving and doing well. And players should take that into consideration. If casinos don't survive, certainly the players can't win, have anybody to win off of. All right. Usually we have commercials explaining the current promotion at South Point Palms and VideoPoker.com. Each of our sponsors is aware for the pre-taped shows that I won't be able to do this because I'm out of the country. I thank each of our sponsors very much for this understanding. Our guest next week will be two blackjack players, Kyle and Di, who has successfully sued a Mesquite, Nevada casino for false arrest. Interestingly, this is being taped before we're talking to Bob Nersessian, but the Bob Nersessian show will come about after we tape the Kyle and Di interview, who were Nersessian's clients. So it's going to be curious as to how that. So Richard and I will be very well informed when we talk to Bob Nersessian on the air. And, of course, our listeners who hear all our shows will have heard the Bob Nersessian show before we hear Kyle and Di. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. It sounds interesting. All right. We thank you all very much for listening. Thank you, Jeffrey Compton.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.